Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Matt Scooge from the Minnesota DNR. Matt works up in Baudette, and that makes him one of the experts on Lake of the Woods biology. That's what this conversation is all about. And full disclosure, we kind of planned on talking about walleyes the whole time, and we ended up going down a few other rabbit holes and talk a little bit about sturgeon. Just a lot of fun, interesting, entertaining information. And, you know, every time I have one of these kind of conversations, I feel like I come out of it a little bit more educated, a little bit smarter. And anytime I go out on the water, I definitely think about these conversations when I'm making decisions as an angler. If I'm having a tough day, or if I'm trying to find new spots, or I'm trying to find new fish on any given day, on any given body of water, any of these conversations, no matter what we're talking about, we're talking about Lake of the Woods in this episode, but I feel like, you know, just learning these things about any species of fish, any body of water, just helps me wrap my head around when I'm out on the water and I got to make decisions. If it's a really good day, but I'm just trying to find new spots or find new fish, like, it gives me way more direction in those scenarios. And you know what? If it's a tough day and I'm seeing fish, but they're not biting, and I'm thinking about what's my next move? Do I got to go find new fish? Or do I got to switch up my presentation in some way, shape, or form? These are the kind of conversations I feel like help me the most. So hopefully you guys like it too. We got Matt Scooge. We're talking Lake of the Woods biology. Let's get into it. PK Lures offers a deadly lineup of fish and tackle for walleye anglers. If you like to rig live bait, check out their pre-rig spinner rigs. Everything they have is very unique action profiles and colors. I'm talking about the Dakota Disc or the Wobbler. If you like throwing glide baits, new in 2024, PK came out with the Ridge Glider. It's a shad profile glide bait with an oversized hook, awesome for leaning into big fish. Got a really cool blade accessory on the back for added flash. The action on this thing is so much fun. A must-have for anybody that wants to throw glide baits all summer long. Crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, they've got it all. This summer, if you want to set yourself apart and offer the fish something they've never seen before, check out what PK's got at pklure.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code JMO for 20% off all orders and free shipping for any orders over $75 online. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. It's the perfect summer getaway. I'm talking about Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River in the northwest angle. The perfect scenery includes 14,000 islands. The fishing opportunities are perfect for anglers on every level. It's the walleye capital of the world. Perfect summer fun, resorts, and lodging. It's all waiting for you. Families and corporate groups are welcome too. Come see for yourself. Better yet, come fish for yourself. If you need help, there's charter boats and fishing guides. The magic of Lake of the Woods is waiting to be discovered by you. For more details, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Where are you from? Where does this whole story start for you, man?
So I was born in kind of north central Minnesota, Park Rapids area. I grew up fishing all the lakes around Park Rapids. I spent my time fishing growing up, a lot of open water ice angling. That was one of my favorite things to do. So that's what kind of got me interested in fish. And then because of that interest, I went to Bemidji State for my undergrad. And I did a undergrad in fisheries management and then wound up down in the southern U.S. for a few years. So I went down to Arkansas to do a master's degree where I looked at fish community structure in relation to agriculture. So I was looking at what impact does agriculture have on what fish species occur, comparing basically large agricultural drainage ditches to more natural streams in the National Wildlife Refuge system. And then I moved over to Oklahoma, worked over there for about 3 years as a stream fish biologist. And then I've been up here for coming up on 6 years. I started out in Baudette as the assistant fishery supervisor, where I was working on a lot of Stream River stuff. Worked on the Red River, helped a bunch with the Rainy River stuff. So, and then a little over a year ago, I got an opportunity to become the fishery supervisor for the Baudette work area. And the Baudette work area basically covers from the Lake of the Woods County west to the North Dakota border along the Canadian border, and then south down to just north of Grand Forks. So that's kind of where I work, and brief kind of my background. You asked about fishing stories. So I grew up fishing. One of my favorite places to fish growing up was the Straight River for brown trouts. I really enjoyed the hex hatch thing through my teenage years. So kind of got out of trout country through my travels and my work experience, but it's nice to be close enough now where I can run down there and get back into that a little bit. I also grew up ice fishing for walleyes on them lakes in the Park Rapids area. Them were kind of two of the fishing opportunities in the area where I grew up that I really enjoyed.
You live right in Baudette. You work in Baudette. I mean, but you're working out there. You get a chance to get out on Lake of the Woods at all?
Yeah. So I try to get out there as much as I can. I still like to fish a lot. So I, this time of year, I do quite a bit of sturgeon fishing. Sturgeon fishing, coming up here once walleye opens, do a bunch of walleye fishing out on the lake. I really enjoy ice fishing, especially early ice when the walleyes push up a little shallower. I probably fish the Rainy River early more than Lake of the Woods, but fishing for walleyes, they tend to get some bigger, like flat fish, tend to get a little bigger fish. They're still, so we get a fall emerald shiner run up here that some of the bigger walleyes out of Lake of the Woods will follow the school's emerald shiners up the Rainy River. And if the ice conditions are good on the Rainy in early in the winter, you can get out there and there's still a ton of emerald shiners under the ice, and then big fish will still be around. So you can target them relatively shallow on the Rainy River. And it tends to be more of a even early morning, evening bite, which is fine for me because I just run out there after work. So then I literally, my office is like 3 blocks from the Rainy River where I fish for them. I just fish right in town here. So
What's sort of the status update on what the Rainy River run was like this year?
The fishing was real good this year. And it kind of extended. We had kind of weird weather, so the ice went out early. So people guys were able to get out pretty early, and then it got cold again, and it actually refro a lot of the river refroze. So it kind but the guys were still able to get out there catching a lot of fish. And then late, it reopened late, and the water levels were so low that when the Big Fork and Little Fork opened up, it didn't really muddy the river up like it does most years. So the fishing stayed good right up until the end. Whereas most years, when the Big Fork and Little Fork open up, it really shuts off the walleye bite because it muddies it up so much that the walleye bite just dies off. The sturgeon fishing stays real good, but the walleye fishing really dies back. But this year that didn't happen because the water's so low.
The sturgeon, what's the status update on the sturgeon fishing up there?
So the status on the sturgeon, so the sturgeon population is doing really well. So we just finished, you probably heard about the effort by that was or the lawsuit by the Center for Biological Diversity to get the lake sturgeon listed under the Endangered Species Act. And actually the decision just came out from Fish and Wildlife Service, I don't know, it was a couple weeks ago, to not list. And a lot of that has to do with biologists like me, my predecessors, and all the work we've done on not only the Rainy River to recover the populations that were the numbers that were way down, but also across the entire range of the lake sturgeons. So like in the Red River, we've done a ton of stocking, all the dam removal stuff. But it really started in Minnesota with the Rainy River, St. Croix River. Those populations are kind of where the sturgeon recovery really started, and we're well on our way to having a fully recovered lake sturgeon population. Basically, we've met the short-term recovery goals for Lake Sturgeon at this point, and we have not assessed the long-term recovery goals. The plan is to take a close look at that around 2030, but the long-term recovery goals are basically looking at whether we have those really old, really large fish. So at this point, we have not taken that close of a look at that part of the recovery for what you would expect from a fully recovered sturgeon population, but the numbers are excellent. There's a lot of fish out in the population, and we're seeing, we monitor the juvenile, are we getting juvenile fish into the new fish into the population every year. We go out there and we sample in June, and we're seeing year classes pretty much every year. So we're getting consistent reproduction. We got large females out there. We got males showing up. I was actually just out at one of the spawning sites yesterday evening, and there was a ton of fish in there spawning current. Like they would be, if I went down there now, they'd be in there actively spawning. So that's kind of a cool thing to see, that the sturgeon recovery has come to the point where there, you can go down there and you can watch them big females in there spawning, and the males just stack up in there, and it's something to see. So
when you say you're sampling them, or, you know, you're checking on them in June, are they still like in the river system then, or describe that a little bit?
So I misspoke there a little bit. So we sample the juveniles, actually I think it's August. June we're out in the lake. So we monitor adult spawning, so we're doing that currently.
Yep.
And for that, what we're looking at is basically spawning periodicity, how often are females spawning, how often are males spawning. And then we're looking at site fidelity, which is basically, do they go back to the same location to spawn when they're spawning? Do they typically spawn at the same location, or do they move around to these various different spawning locations? We're looking at the size structure of the spawning population. So basically, how big is an average female that's spawning? How big is an average male? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we've started a new program in the last few years where we're looking at Lake Sturgeon out in Lake of the Woods proper. So we're sampling, and what we're looking at there is distribution of Lake Sturgeon out in Lake of the Woods, the size structure of the adult population out in Lake of the Woods, and then just relative abundance, so that we can compare across time, are we seeing increases in our catch rates or decreases in our catch rates? This is the first time through, so we don't have anything to compare to at this point.
Sure.
But we're doing that out on Lake of the Woods, and then later in the summer, like July, August timeframe, that's when we do that juvenile stuff. So we're looking at year class strength. Are we getting new fish coming into the population? And also with that, we're able to age those smaller fish more accurately. And the other thing we're doing with all these fish is tagging them. So we're putting both a dangler tag, which is a tag that's visible to anglers, and then a pit tag, and we get a lot of angler reporting on those dangler tags. So we can look at where has it been caught? Where do we tag it at? Where has it been caught last? How many times has it been caught? That kind of thing. And then the pit tag allows us to, even if that tag gets caught in an angler's net, or if it gets caught in a tree branch or whatever, for whatever reason it falls off, we still have a record of that fish. And also the pit tag allows us to tag a lot smaller fish, so we can tag pretty small fish that we wouldn't be able to put a dangler tag on, so that we can basically, if we recapture that fish, we can track their growth throughout their entire life cycle, as long as we can get our hands on them again.
Yeah. Well, what's a pit tag?
It's like basically what they put in, like a dog.
Oh, like a microchip kind of a deal.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like the size of a grain of rice. We put it in a syringe, and we shove the syringe up, and it's right in the back of the sturgeon underneath that heart. So if you've ever handled a sturgeon, they got these bony structures on their back and sides called scutes, and it goes right under their scutes. And basically you take a wand and you wand over it's called a pit tag reader, and you wand over this, and it gives it each pit tag has a unique identifying number. And so we can, if we want the fish and there's a pit tag in there, we'll pick it up. So it's a way to track the fish with an internal tag that won't fall off and that we can put into a much smaller fish than we can put the dangler tags on. But the advantage to the dangler tags is that anglers can see them and then they report them. So if you catch a tag sturgeon, if you search Minnesota, the Minnesota DNR tag reporting through that process, and it actually sends a tag report to me personally, I get a tag report and then we will process that tag return. And actually we send out basically all the information we have on the fish. We'll send that back to the angler as we have time to do that. So that's kind of a cool program. And it allows us to look at movement from point to point. Obviously we can't track them through time, but you get point to point movement. You can watch them grow, that kind of thing. So it's pretty neat information that the anglers help us gather.
And you know, another thing that I'm always interested in, you know, kind of like the stuff that we as anglers, we don't see, like we can see reported information, you know, we can find, you know, if we look for it, know where to look for it. And maybe that's part of this conversation too, is like where to look for some, you know, like reported information on you guys. But I, you know, what we don't see is how you do stuff, you know, and it's just interesting to hear. You know, I mean, I guess I don't even know, but I like asking those questions. Maybe nobody else cares, but I do. Like, and I'm curious, like when you're out on the lake, like how are you finding and catching or monitoring fish? And maybe this has something to do with what are the seasonal patterns of the sturgeon? How do you do it?
Well, first of all, since you mentioned finding this information, I'm going to plug our area website and a couple of the other resources. So, most of what I'm going to talk about here, there's information both on our area webpage. If you search Bidette Area Fisheries through the DNR website, you'll find a lot of background information. The other place to look for Lake of the Woods specific information is if you just Google search the Minnesota DNR Lake of the Woods, you'll find a website that covers information specific to Lake of the Woods. So that one will have like water level information, links to water level information, the management plan, the stock status update. The other thing we do is we put out seasonal fishing brochures in the spring and winter that kind of cover stock status and information anglers need to know for like the spring catch and release fishery and the ice season. And we also highlight different efforts occasionally, like about put up like the Keep It Clean brochure talking about not leaving your trash on the ice, that kind of stuff. So that's a good place to get that kind of information. We also put the stock status update on the area website and the Lake of the Woods page, and that kind of goes over the results of our most recent sampling efforts. And the other place you can find good information on the fishery is through the DNR Lake Finder. So that basically is, it has all of the sampling results and you can go back in time and look at sampling results. And that covers pretty much every lake in Minnesota, including Lake of the Woods. So if you search Lake of the Woods on the Lake Finder app, you will find information regarding all the sampling we've done out there. So what we do, actually, we're not necessarily going to go try find them because we want the results to be scientifically valid. So no catch is also data. Right?
Yep.
So, what we're doing is we do what's called a stratified random sampling. So like the Lake of the Woods stuff I was mentioning earlier, where we sample Lake of the Woods, we use mapping software and it randomly assigns points out on the lake. And then we go out there and we set gill nets on them.
Oh, no kidding.
And we tell the program we want, so we have a bathymetric map of the lake. And we're doing we stratify by near shore or offshore. And we say we want a given number of sites in Muskeg Bay that are between 15 and 20 or 10 and 20 feet. And it randomly selects points. You tell it they got to be at least so far apart. And then we just go set nets there. That's how it works.
What have you learned or what can you say about the, you know, kind of those seasonal patterns of the sturgeon? Where do they go?
They tend to be really a lot more shallow than you'd think. Our catch rates offshore are actually the lowest. Like you get out in 30 feet of water, that is where we see the lowest catch rates.
Really?
Where we tend to see the highest catch rates are like that sandy, gravelly, rocky, shallow stuff between about 10 and 15 feet of water. So like out off Long Point, Rocky Point, that area was some of our highest catch rates. like Spring Steel area up to Buffalo Point was some of our higher catch rates. The South Shore of Muskeg was really low catch rates. You start getting over towards Pine Island. Obviously, that's probably driven some by fish moving in and out of the river, but that was also some of our highest catch rates. We've done Muskeg near shore and Big Traverse near shore, which is the Muskeg, for those that aren't familiar, is the portion of the lake that is the bay over by War Road, the big bay over by War Road. Then Big Traverse is kind of the big open part of the lake. I guess I might as well go through all. So the Minnesota part of the lake, I'll go through all of it. So yeah, Muskeg's the War Road part. Big Traverse is the big open part. 4 Mile Bay is inside of Pine Island where the Rainy River flows out. And then Little Traverse is up by the angle north of Garden Island. And for the lake sturgeon stuff, we've so far done the near shore stuff. So less than 25 feet from, we've done near shore Muskeg and near shore Big Traverse. We have not done the offshore stuff. Our plan is to start the offshore stuff this year, but we know that the catch rates offshore tend to be lower from our population estimate stuff we did back in 2014 and 2008. That's where we got the lowest abundance of lake sturgeon. So we're going to be going out there this year and doing our offshore sites. And then once we finish those ones, probably in the next few years, then we'll move up to Little Traverse and look up there for lake sturgeon. And how we're catching them is we're setting gill nets, basically overnight gill net sets with 5-inch, 6-inch, and 7-inch mesh. So there's 3 nets per site. And it's really big mesh, so all we catch is sturgeon, and they seem to do fine in the nets as long as the water temps stay below 70. So once the surface temps start creeping up over 70 degrees, we quit for the year. So
right on.
That's kind of how that project works.
Yeah, I don't know. I find that stuff really interesting. It's like, yeah, I don't know. I would have never, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much it matters or not, but I just like hearing about it, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's been interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. And that sturgeon deal, like I said, man, like working in the industry, man, has that grown in popularity. And rightfully so, man, what a cool fishing opportunity that you guys offer. And, oh, you know, maybe to close out the sturgeon stuff, I didn't even tell you that we were going to talk about sturgeon. I'm just interested when you started talking about it. But what are the regulations? You know, I guess you could probably find this in a synopsis or whatever, but what are the sturgeon regulations? What are the seasons and all that?
So there's a, so it's catch and release, open to catch and release most of the year. There's also a harvest season, which, speaking of sturgeon and the growing popularity, just a little side note. One interesting thing, so the popularity of lake sturgeon fishing has really, it seems like it's taken off, like you mentioned. But to harvest a lake sturgeon, you need to purchase, it's a $5 harvest tag. And we know exactly how, obviously there may be some non-compliance, but generally we have harvest tag information, so we know what's getting harvested. And our harvest has not increased with the increased popularity of the sturgeon fishery. So that tells me that most of it is just it's an increase in popularity, but it's primarily catch and release driven. There's not an increased desire for more harvest. It's just people like to go out and catch and release them. As far as the regulations go, so the catch and keep season is April 24th to May 7th. And to keep one, it's got to either be between 45, it's either between 45 and 50 inches or over 75 inches. And then you go to, there's a short catch and release season from May 8th to the 15th, and then it's closed from May 16th to June 30th. And then there's another harvest season that opens up, and that's from July 1st to September 30th. And then that's the same. You can harvest a 45 to 50 inch or over 75. And then for the rest of the year until April 23rd of the next year, it is catch and release again. And to harvest one, you gotta have the sturgeon tag, and you get one fish per year. So once you tag a fish, you're done.
You're done keeping one, right? Yeah.
You're done keeping one. Yep. And once you And the other thing with that is there's no party fishing for sturgeon. So if somebody else in the boat who doesn't have a sturgeon tag catches one, it has to go back. You can't party fish for them. You have to be the one that catches that fish.
PK Lures offers a deadly lineup of fish and tackle for walleye anglers. If you like to rig live bait, check out their pre-rig spinner rigs. Everything they have is very unique action profiles and colors. I'm talking about the Dakota Disc or the Wobbler. If you like throwing glide baits, new in 2024, PK came out with the Ridge Glider. It's a shad profile glide bait with an oversized hook, awesome for leaning into big fish. Got a really cool blade accessory on the back for added flash. The action on this thing is so much fun. A must have for anybody that wants to throw glide baits all summer long. Crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, they've got it all. This summer, if you want to set yourself apart and offer the fish something they've never seen before, check out what PK's got at pklure.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code JMO for 20% off all orders and free shipping for any orders over $75 online. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. It's the perfect summer getaway. I'm talking about Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River, and the Northwest Angle. The perfect scenery includes 14,000 islands. The fishing opportunities are perfect for anglers on every level. It's the walleye capital of the world. Perfect summer fun, resorts, and lodging. It's all waiting for you. Families and corporate groups are welcome too. Come see for yourself. Better yet, come fish for yourself. If you need help, there's charter boats and fishing guides. The magic of Lake of the Woods is waiting to be discovered by you. For more details, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. I do want to shift gears, though, and talk a little bit more about the walleyes. What are some of the fun facts that we could start off with as it pertains to the walleyes?
So this past year, the walleye fishing has been really good. We had our numbers were down and for walleye the last few years until this past year. And that was primary. Our walleye abundance tends to be driven by year class strength. So if we stack a couple of really good spawns, we tend to get really good walleye fishing for a few years. If we have a couple bad year classes, which is what happened, that's what led to a little bit poorer fishing the last couple of years. The worst year classes, if you stack a couple of those, you tend to have a little bit poorer fishing. But we just had a couple of good year classes come through. Or one of them just hit this year. They're like 13, 14 inches, probably now around that range now. And that's really driving the abundance back up again. And just from talking to anglers this past winter, walleye fishing was really good out there. So generally things have improved from the last couple of years. Walleye fishing this past winter was as good as it's been for the last few years.
Yeah, like the numbers, like Lake of the Woods, when it's going, Lake of the Woods is that type of place where you can just get your hands on a bunch of them. But then you see these tournament weights, you know, where there's clearly big fish out there, right? Like that's never been a debate. Lake of the Woods is a big body of water that can produce big fish. But then there's always that conversation of like, you know, where are they? Or if you go there a few times and you don't catch a big one, it's like, are there really that many in there? What can you tell me about that? Like, how do we start that conversation off? Or what can you tell me about, you know, just the age classes and, you know, the size structure that's out there?
Yeah, sure. So Lake of the Woods has a really diverse size structure. So and if you know anything about population biology, obviously the smaller fish are going to be more abundant. That's a healthy population. That's how it's going to be. You don't want to be old fish skewed like that. You don't want to be dominated by big fish. That's not necessarily a recipe for a healthy population. But we have a healthy number of large fish out there. We're the last, basically since about 2010, we've been running like one to two fish over 20 inches per net, which is well above the historic average. We typically, like, you go back to prior to 2010 and that, like, a good year was one fish per net, to put that into perspective. We dipped down this last year a little bit, for big fish, some of them older age class, I think it's primarily driven by some of the really old, really big fish are starting to age out of the population. We had a couple of really strong year classes back in the late 90s or early 2000s who are starting to age out of the population. And some of the more recent strong, really strong age classes are starting to creep up into that 20 to that basically the protected slot. They're starting to creep into there, but it'll take a little time to backfill. And that was 1 year of sampling also, but the numbers of the really large fish are down slightly just because the fish that were driving them abundances up are starting to age out of the population, but there's plenty of them out there. We do spring electrofishing. So we're electrofishing for walleyes up at the Long Sioux Rapids, which is a known walleye spawning location. And we still get lots of large walleyes when we're sampling up there because we're up there looking to see the size structure of the spawning stock. But Lake of the Woods is kind of neat in the fact that even if you're not catching a bunch of big fish, there's plenty of little fish out there. The other thing that's kind of cool about Lake of the Woods is for a lot of people, walleye fishing is a morning evening bite. Well, on Lake of the Woods, especially in the wintertime, you have the sauger there too, so you can fill your day. You're catching fish all day long. It's not just a morning evening bite thing. I know that really good walleye fishermen, they can find walleyes all day long, but for your average angler, it's probably more of a morning evening deal. Whereas on Lake of the Woods, you can go out there and even if the walleye aren't biting, you got sauger around, especially in the wintertime, you got sauger around, you're picking up fish all day long.
Along those same lines, you mentioned, you know, some of the bigger fish aging out. I'm curious about things like growth rates and the age of fish. Like, how long does it take to get a fish to get to 25 inches or 22 inches or 30 inches? Like, do you have any of that information? Like, how old is an old fish on Lake of the Woods? And, you know, along the lines of like growth rates and genetics, like what are all the things that go into that? Or what are some of that information that you might have?
So if you're asking about the really big fish, it's so highly variable with that. So when you start, once you get to what we have for protected slot, the 19 and a half to 28, once you start getting up in that, you have fast growers, you have slow growers, and it's all over the place. If you come to me with a 30 inch fish, it could be 10 years younger than a 19 inch fish you bring me. Like, it's just all over the place because some fish just grow better than others when they get to that size. But, I mean, we have average growth rates. It's just so all over the place that it's really hard to say. Like,
my gears start turning right away with that. Like, you know, what could possibly be the answer for some of those things? Like, is it purely genetic, or is it forage based related? I mean, I love asking you biology guys questions about forage base anywhere I go. Those are super hot topics, like, for anglers to hear about, because knowing and understanding more about the forage base in itself helps you be a better angler, or you know, it definitely can be a key piece of information when you're breaking down big water as to, you know, anything about that. Like, what would you say, even if you're just speculating, you don't know for sure, you know, what are some of the big key factors with those types of growth rates when you say, you know, a 30 incher might be younger than a 19 and a half or a 20 incher?
So, genetics definitely plays a role. Part of it is genetics. So whether they're dumping a lot of energy into egg production early in their life, when do they start producing eggs? Because if they're producing eggs at a younger, smaller size, obviously if you're dumping a bunch of energy into egg production, you're not going to grow as fast. So it takes you longer to get to them bigger sizes. And if you start earlier, you're probably not going to reach as large a size. And that's probably mostly genetic driven. The other thing, yeah, like you said, forage. So you take a fish who's primarily lives near shore, feeds on smaller yellow perch, that kind of thing. Smaller yellow perch, probably some shiners. It's going to grow slower than a fish who goes offshore and follows schools of tulipy around and eats.
That's just a better meal, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just pure. I mean, tulipy tend to be greasier. I mean, if you ever cleaned a tulipee, the fat content in a tulipee is higher. They're bigger. You get some of them, like we take some diet stuff. When we do our fall assessment, we look at diets of walleyes, and like you get them real big females. Most of them have empty stomachs, but most of the time, if they have food in their stomach, they have like one big tulipee. I mean, I shouldn't say big tulipee, but they have one tulipee, like an average size tulipee. That's a lot of times what their diet consists of. They'll eat one tulipee. Well, if you're eating how many 4-inch yellow perch does it take to, do you have to catch to get the same caloric intake as catching one big or one tulipee? Like you just have to eat a lot less often if you're getting that one big greasy cheeseburger versus eating a whole bunch of tiny little salads, right?
Oh yeah. No, we've had those conversations on here before. I love hearing that, because I think that is very descriptive. Like, do you guys do some of that like forage assessment? Like what can you tell me along those lines? You know, even if it's just general information, like what are some of the trends of the forage?
So the primary, from what we see in diets, and then I'll just throw in some of my own observations. So they, a lot of the bigger females, like I mentioned, you cut them open and look at what they've been eating. If they have something in their stomach, it's typically tulipees. The other thing, so like you come fish the Rainy River in the fall during the Emerald Shiner run, and there's just so many of them out there. Like there, you pull a fish into the boat if there's a lot of shiners around, and they're just like puking up shiners. You pull them out of the hole. Ice fishing late, early ice on the Rainy River, it's the same thing. And it's kind of interesting too. Like there's just so much food around, and them shiners are calorie dense too. Like you put a bag of Emerald Shiners in the sunshine for a couple hours in the springtime, and it's just like a greasy mess. So they're fairly high fat content too. So that the ones that get follow that, the big schools of shiners, even though you're not getting as much per meal, they're so greasy that, and if there's a ton of them around, they can just gorge themselves. Whereas like the perch aren't, I don't think they're as greasy, and maybe they're a little spread out, a little harder to catch. So it takes more energy to get a meal. But the primary forage for walleye in Lake of the Woods would be probably the tulipees, the yellow perch, and then the various shiner species. Emerald shiners probably the primary one. Then there's some spot tails and common shiners and stuff, but the primary would be the emerald shiners. And they'll just follow, if they get on a school of big shiners, or if they follow a school of tulipee around, they're gonna get that. It's so much easier for them to catch a meal, and then that meal is so more calorie dense, so they don't, they just are able to grow faster because they're getting more calories. The other thing I've noticed is like ice fishing out on Lake of the Woods. So you fish out in deeper water, and a lot of your big wall, if you catch nicer walleyes, they tend to be, so you catch sauger right on the bottom, but to catch the bigger walleyes, they tend to be suspended, which makes me think they're either they're following schools of shiners or schools of tulipees. A lot of times you'll get a school of what looks like tulipees on the graph go through, and like right underneath that school of tulipees, 10 feet off the bottom, you'll pick up a big walleye or a really, really big sauger or a pike or something that, I mean, my guess is it's probably following that school of tulipees.
Yeah.
That's where you tend to catch some bigger fish as well, off the bottom, suspended. And I think they're chasing them schools of either big schools of shiners, or they're chasing schools of tulipees around.
What would you say is the most difficult time in a walleye's life, you know, to get to, say, 30 inches? What does that all take in the lifespan? Now I realize like when certain year classes aren't represented, it's usually has something to do with a successful spawn or not. But let's just say, you know, like, you know, successful or not, if a young walleye hatches, what does it need? What does it do throughout its life to reach 30 inches? And are there some barriers in there? Is there ever a shortage of forage for a walleye of any particular size and type where they got to get to that size where they can chase down those shiners or where they can suspend and go after those tula bees. But Lake of the Woods is so full of food. It's so full of life. Does it really just come down to if they can hatch? If they can hatch in good water quality, like, is it easy street the whole time? Like, how would you describe that? Like, the lifespan of a 30-inch walleye on Lake of the Woods?
In the fisheries world, we call that a bottleneck. And the biggest bottleneck, actually, so when we are able to somewhat project year class strength, and so water temperature is the biggest driver of a successful hatch spawn. But then the biggest predictor of year class strength is actually overwinter survival, of that first year overwinter survival, which is strongly related to water temperature during the first summer, which I think has a lot, is driving phytoplankton production. So can they get to the point where they can they grow fast enough to get to the point where they can switch over to eating, first of all, bugs, and then small, like larval juvenile fish, to get to a size where they have enough lipid fat reserves to make it through that first winter. Because if they get enough, if they get big enough where they get good survival over that first winter, we tend to get a good year class. If the young of year walleyes are small going into the first winter, we tend to get a poor year class. So size of the fish going into that first winter is very predictive of strength of year class.
And then when is the first like check? Like when you report these the population, like the population numbers and the year class, like when do you check in for the first time?
So year class strength basically lags by, it's about 3 years. So they don't really start showing up in our gill nets till age 3.
I suppose they got to get big enough to be caught in a gill net.
Right. Yep. So we'll get them age zero, or we'll even get them down to age zero, like the first summer in the gill nets, but the gear is not designed to catch those fish. It's basically designed to catch 12. Our sampling gear is designed to catch 12 to 20 inch walleyes. That's what it's primarily targeted at. We catch bigger fish, we catch smaller fish, but them numbers aren't super meaningful because the gear is not designed to do that.
Sure.
So when they start hitting 12 inches, about age 3 or so, that's when we know, that's when we can be like, yeah, that was a good year class. Yeah, that was actually a poor year class. Before that, we predict it based on, we go out and seine in June, we trawl later in the summer, and then we electrofish late in the fall to see how big they are going into that first winter. And we can use that to mathematically model what we think the year class strength is going to be so that we have some sort of prediction what direction are we heading. Whereas once they hit age 3, then we can confirm, yes, we had a good age class, no, or good year class, no, we had a poor year class. And we're generally pretty good at, especially the really strong and really weak ones, the average ones, like we're kind of, sometimes we project a moderately strong one and it turns out to be moderately weak just because they're so little difference between the two. But we definitely are good at predicting this is going to be a really strong year class. This is going to be a really weak year class. It's just that when we're more on the average, it gets a little more difficult. But
dude, I think that is, I like hearing that. I like hearing that description. It kind of, yeah, that definitely helps interpret. You'll give a lot of texture to when I do go on your website and I'm looking at these graphs and things like that. It's like, if I don't read all the fine print, I'm just looking at these graphs. But that's I think that's definitely key stuff to learn. Key stuff to learn, I think, for sure, man. I really appreciate that. Well, we're not going to be able to have time. We're going to have to sit around for another hour if we really get into too much more, dude. But I really appreciate it. I like the sturgeon information, too. I think that's fascinating. I think a lot of people are more and more getting into it.
Yeah.
And for rightfully so, it's a really fun deal. Like you said, it's growing in popularity, but you're not harvesting more. It's literally like, it's just one of those really, it's almost like you're catching like an alien fish. It's for anybody in the Midwest, you don't get your hands on like a fish that size. You don't fish with that kind of gear very often. I think that's it's just like exotic and really, really cool. And I think it's great that, you know, that the research is going on that stuff and just learning some of that stuff, you know, whether I do it a whole lot or not. I think that's, I don't know, I just get a kick out of it. But the walleye information, I think a lot of what you said here helps me a ton interpret, the reported information. When a guy goes on and you're looking at all this stuff, and even on a different body of water, just hearing from you DNR guys talk about this stuff, you're an angler. I mean, you're out there doing this stuff, yourself. You're kind of your own little beta tester, you know. You're going out and I'm jealous that you live so close to, you know, man, you live in Baudette, dude. I mean, you know, year round, of course, you know, but man, in the spring, dude, you can just cut out a little bit early, man. You live close enough that you could spend your lunch casting for big walleyes in the spring. My gosh.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah, jealous. except I don't, because the ice is on and I can go catch 35 to 40 inch pike even closer.
Yeah, that's the whole nother deal, dude. Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah, that conversation on Lake of the Woods can be endless
stuff, but.
no and we'll have to at some point. I mean, I, you know, hopefully you like your job and you stick around for a while, because I think there's a lot of conversations we could have over the years that you know, to help with all this stuff. But I think, you know, and there's probably, we could get way more specific on some of these numbers and some of these graphs and some of this stuff. We'll have to at some point. But man, I really appreciate the time. We got to close this out some. We got to draw a line somewhere. Yeah. We'll be sitting around wasting our day here. Let's sign this off, man.
Other thing I would add, not to stretch this out, but the if you're flexible, you come up here hoping to catch 100 walleyes, but it blows 40 miles an hour. But we got the river right here. Maybe you go out and you catch it. A sturgeon of a lifetime, or you do some pike fishing and you catch your pike of a lifetime, or there's some really good smallmouth bass opportunities in the Rainy River. So there's always something else to try too. So if you have a little flexibility, maybe it's not exactly what you were hoping to do with your game plan, but if you have some flexibility in your game plan, there's always those other opportunities that if you're willing to try. Maybe you do something that you weren't expecting and it turns out to be your most memorable fishing trip of your life because you were willing to be a little bit flexible and try something a little out of the box.
Oh, man. You're going to make me want to sit around here for another 2 hours with you, Matt. God dang. No, I love it, man. I love that. You know, and I think that a lot of that, I like everything you just said there. I think that really speaks to, you know, not just you being, you know, passionate and involved with your job, but you're an angler. And I like making that point. Anytime I talk to the state, you know, it's easy for, you know, the DNR at times to take a lot of flack, right? You get blamed for a bad day of fishing or a lot of anglers, right? But I think that anybody that I've ever talked to or any time I've ever ran into a game warden or whatever, I mean, you guys are anglers too. You're thinking of these things and you know, I really appreciate that. That's a great point. Let's sign this off. If anybody ever has any questions for you specifically or anything about Lake of the Woods or maybe plug those resources again one time, let's just sign it off that way. How can people get a hold of you if you're willing to throw that out there and plug some of those resources here. We'll sign it off that way.
Yeah. So my contact, if you search the Baudette Area Fisheries page, my contact, there's a contact us link for everybody in the office here, or Baudette Fisheries, baudette.fisheries@state.mn.us that'll get you. That's the email address for the office. So even if I leave this job or whatever, that's a good email address always for the area office. If you're just interested in general information regarding Lake of the Woods or any of the fisheries in the Baudette work area, check out the Baudette Area Fisheries webpage or the Lake of the Woods. Lake of the Woods webpage, they're both, if you search Baudette Area Fisheries and Minnesota DNR, you'll get that. The Baudette Area page or the Lake, same thing with Lake of the Woods, search Lake of the Woods and Minnesota DNR and you'll get the DNR webpage for Lake of the Woods. The other place to get a lot of good information is through the Lake Finder app for Lake of the Woods. You search Lake of the Woods on the Lake Finder app and it'll have a lot of the biological information there, catch rates, size structure, gill netting results, that kind of stuff. So
there it is,
good
man.
Way to get information.
Oh man, there it is, dude. I get really jacked up about this stuff. Like this to me, I love learning all these sort of things, and I definitely I believe the modern day angler is really thirsty for this kind of information, and it definitely, you know, helps us be better anglers, or at least better thinkers, better decision makers when we're out there on the water, when we just know a little bit more. That's probably true with anything. Is I think that this is such a fun thing and fun, popular conversations that anglers are having nowadays, and learning a little bit more, getting a little bit more involved, and helps us be better sportsmen and conservationists when we know stuff like this too. So all plays in, man. Well, anyways, I appreciate the time, Matt. Let's sign it off.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thanks. Yep. Talk to you.